Last week, I started a series on renewing marriage, and I want to continue that today. Last time, we talked about the three phases of marriage. You know, you have the honeymoon phase, and then phase two is the phase where we're just kind of crushed together by pressures of life and circumstances into becoming a single unit, into becoming one flesh. And it's in that crucible, this cauldron of conflict that I call phase two, that the godly structure of the family gets hammered out. And then phase three is when we start living life as one flesh and enjoying it and loving that life as one flesh. But this teaching is really not about the phases of marriage. It's really about renewing marriage. And every phase of marriage can need renewal. Now, I guess maybe the honeymoon phase doesn't, because it's kind of self-renewing. And phase two for sure needs a lot of renewal. But you know, even phase three, even those of us who've been married a long time, still need to renew our marriages. It's easy to fall into complacency and start taking each other for granted. And I want to suggest to you that even if you think you're in phase three of marriage, to listen to some of these techniques and start practicing some of these things that we talk about. And I think you'll enjoy even more the third phase of marriage. We'll turn to 1 Peter 3. Last week, I kind of gave you the Father Dan paraphrase of what I think the godly family structure is. We talked about how the husband and the wife become the governing unit of the family. The parents are the ones who rule the family together, and hopefully they're doing so in agreement and in consensus. But still, the husband is the head of the household. He's the one that has that leadership position. And so let's look at 1 Peter 3, the first 9 verses, and this is where Peter describes the godly family structuring. And I want to start in verses 8 and 9, where Peter really explains why is this important. He says, to sum up, let all be harmonious. In other words, the idea is let's get to the place in marriage where all is harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult. That's the phase two part. But giving a blessing instead. Now listen to this last part. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. So what Peter is saying is, if you can come to this place of having a godly family structure, then you'll come to the place of a blessing. During phase two, when the marriage is rocky and troubled, it's really hard to find the blessings of God sometimes. And that's why you need to listen to these lessons that we're talking about, and you need to successfully get through phase two, because God has a blessing waiting for you at the end of that. That's kind of the whole intent of getting you through that. Now, let's look at verses 2 and 6 real quick, just a little part, because I want to cover something that we'll talk about more in general as we go through the verses. In verse 2, Peter talks about women, observe your chaste and respectful behavior. That word respectful there is actually the Greek word phobos or phobio, which is where we get our word fear from. It's usually used for irrational fear. So here Peter says that women are supposed to be fearful in their behavior. And then in the bottom of verse 6, he says, we are supposed to be without fear. Don't be frightened by any fear. Well, my first question is, ladies, what are you afraid of? He's talking about fear here. I mean, it's human nature to be afraid of giving control of our lives to someone else. My personal opinion is that most people that refuse to serve God, the reason they do that is because they're afraid of turning control of their life over to God. I mean, that's just human nature. We don't want to give anybody else control of our life. And Peter starts this scripture here in the first verse. He says, wives, be submissive to your own husbands. Well, that's a pretty tough thing to do. Are you afraid that your husband might make a bad decision if you turn things over to him, huh? Are you afraid that maybe your husband might be selfish? Has he ever been selfish before? Been selfish in his decisions, huh? Is he sometimes immature and therefore you think maybe you can't trust him like you wish you could? I mean, you have reasons to fear your husband as leading the head of the household, right? Actually, Peter tells the women, okay, well, be afraid without being afraid. Huh? Verse 2 says be afraid. Verse 6, don't be afraid. What's he talking about? What we have here is really two different uses of the word fear. The common use at the time, even in the Old Testament, you see this, where they talk about be sure and fear God, fear someone. When they use that term fear in that way, they're not talking about be afraid for your life or be afraid that somebody's going to hurt you or do something bad to you. They're talking about have respect for someone or show someone respect and honor. We now use the word respect. We don't use the word fear in that context, but for whatever reason, that was the word that they chose to use. And it's almost as if they're saying, you need to respect this person as if they could hurt you if you disobeyed them. Or you need to respect them like you would someone that maybe you should be fearful of. And I think that's why they were using that word fear. Not that you should be afraid of the person, but that you should show them that same kind of respect. And then the second way that they're using the term in verse 6 is truly being afraid of something. Afraid of bad consequences, afraid of bad outcomes, afraid of physical abuse, afraid of emotional abuse, that sort of thing. And Peter is saying, ladies, don't let that kind of fear inform your relationship or drive your relationship. Most women won't allow themselves to submit to their husbands because of fear. And Peter's telling us, don't do that. Don't let your fears come in the way of a godly, one-flesh relationship, ladies. If you can't submit to your husband's leadership of the family, then you're never going to be a godly, one-flesh relationship. And unfortunately, that means you may never get out of phase two of your marriage and you may be miserable the rest of your life. Yes, sometimes those fears are well-founded. I understand that. But usually they're not. I think women are born with an innate sense that they are better qualified to be the boss of the family. And in a lot of ways, they should be. Most men don't want to be the boss. I mean, you know, hey, let the woman do it. I'll just be a little boy and let mommy take care of me. I mean, a lot of guys feel that way. Look in Genesis 3, the last half of verse 15. You know, God's giving his orders to Adam and Eve before he kicks them out of the garden. And he says, women, your desire is going to be after the man, but he's going to rule over you. And he says it in such a way that you get the impression women aren't going to like that part. And they usually don't. They're afraid of that, see? But Peter is saying, ladies, you're going to have to set aside that fear. If you'll give your husband some room to be the head of the house, you might be surprised at how well he eventually rises to that challenge. Well, I tried that once, you know, for an hour or two, and it just didn't work. Well, an hour or two isn't enough. You're going to have to abandon your husband to the Lord completely, and you're going to have to trust God to eventually make your husband the man that God wants him to be. You ain't perfect either, wives, right? I mean, you asked your husband to cut you some slack, right? Well, you need to give your husband some space. You need to give him some room to make mistakes. You need to give him the room to suffer the consequences of his own bad decisions. You need to give him a chance to grow up and become the head of the house. And you have to be able to set aside your fear in order to be able to do that. So ladies, one of the keys to coming out of phase two of the marriage is fearing without fear. In other words, being able to respect your husband and not being afraid to submit to your husband's leadership. Listen, men crave respect and they crave honor. For most men, it's like the fuel that drives them. And I say, ladies, gas them up a little and you'll be amazed at how well they'll do. Now, for some of us guys, especially if you're in the middle of phase two, we've been running on empty for a while. And so you may have to gas them up for a while. You may have to put some honor and respect in there and offer them the honor and respect they crave for a while before it starts coming out and coming back to you, before you begin to reap a harvest of respect back to you. Yeah, but his actions aren't worthy of respect, I can hear women saying. Well, take it by faith if you have to, okay? And treat them with the same respect that you wish they'd treat you. Because if you're in phase two, you're probably not treating each other with very much respect. Feed each other a little love and respect, and I tell you, you'll reap a harvest of a wonderful one-flesh relationship in your marriage. And you keep feeding each other contempt and unforgiveness and disrespect, and you may never be happy again. Now let's start in verses 1 through 4. In the same way, you wives, in the same way, he's talking about the way Jesus submitted to God, and Jesus is now the good shepherd, and we submit ourselves to Jesus as head of the church. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands. Now, Peter's making it very clear here that women, in God's perfect society, women are not generally subservient to men, because women are equal to men in every way. He's saying, wives, you need to be subject to your own husband. That's all he's talking about. We have a lot of societies in the world where the women are treated as second-class citizens, and any man can lord it over any woman. That's not what Peter's talking about here, okay? Peter's making a statement of principle here, and he says, wives, you're expected to be obedient and submissive even if your husband is disobedient and is not acting right himself. Let me show you that. He says, be submissive to your own husbands so that even if any of them are disobedient in the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. So the implication is, even if the guy is not doing anything right, even if he's completely disobedient to God, wives, you're still expected to be submissive to him. And the reason is, you know, we keep telling people, you can't change each other in marriage. Women, quit trying to change your husband. But you know what? Peter here says just the contrary. He says, ladies, you want this guy to change? You're going to need to show him some respect, and you're going to need to be submissive to him so that he can change. Why does Peter start with a woman here? I mean, the man's the head of the house, right? Why didn't Peter start with him? I think the Lord knows that, first of all, the women mature earlier than men. And I think the Lord also knows that women usually can continue to function and do what's right under persecution if they know it's right what they're doing. They can do it under pressure and under persecution much better than we men can, I think. And so here's the key to becoming one flesh and getting through phase two. We're taught when we grow up that who we are and how we should act depends on how someone else acts and what they do. In other words, we are taught really to react to other people. Let me give you some examples if you don't believe that. If that bully punches you, then you're just going to have to punch him right back. Have you ever heard that or told a kid that? If she can't say nice things about you, then you just don't have to be friends with her. That's usually in middle school when the girls start going through that kind of stuff. If they do something wrong and make you angry, then you're just going to have to wait for them to come to you first to ask for forgiveness. That's how we act, right? Respect and trust are earned. If you don't do what's right, then people aren't going to trust and respect you. Huh? I mean, I've told my daughter that. If they don't give you a birthday present, then you don't have to give them one. That's usually, you know, grades 2 and 3 when that sort of thing starts happening. Isn't that the way we teach our children? That you're supposed to react to what other people do. The key to becoming one flesh, though, is just the opposite. We're going to have to go against everything we've ever learned about relationships, and we're going to have to learn to treat our spouse with love, with respect, and with honor, whether or not they ever do the right thing, whether or not they ever deserve it, whether or not they ever reciprocate. Now, I know I'm asking you to do a hard thing, but if you'll take care of your own self and make sure, ladies, that you have the right attitude, and men, if you'll do the same, if we'll each do what's right in our relationships, then the other person in the relationship, it's going to be easier for them to do what's right. So I think the Lord knows that women can do this better than men can. That women can say, I don't care how much of a jerk you are, I'm going to do what's right. Now, a lot of women don't do that, but I think the Lord knows women have the ability to do that better than we men do. And so that's why Peter starts with the wife here, and he's telling her how to behave. But when one person in the relationship quits reacting to the other one, and they start respecting the other one, then it's just a matter of time before the other spouse begins to change and do the same. I can tell you that from experience. You can break that cycle of tit for tat and stay in a place where you're leaving it broken for a while, then eventually the relationship will begin to mend, the marriage will begin to mend. Debbie and I, that is the only thing really that got us out of phase two, is that we broke that cycle of tit for tat and quit reacting to each other and started treating each other the way we should have been all along, no matter how the other one acted, and it began to bear fruit. And I think Peter knows that women can start that process easier than us men can. Well, he goes on in verses 3 and 4 to talk about inner beauty. says, and let not your adornment be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with imperishable qualities of a gentle and a quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. I can remember when I first learned this concept of inner beauty. I was probably in seventh grade. I was old enough to have started noticing girls, you know. And so a new girl came into the school, and I mean, she was gorgeous. Woo! She was just perfect in every way, it seemed. And so I was certain right away that I was going to get to know this girl. Now, of course, at that age, you don't know why you're going to get to know them so well, but I knew that I wanted to, and so I set out to get to know her well. And after about 2 days, I discovered she was the most vindictive, ugly, vapid, I mean, you name a bad quality, she had it. She was selfish. She was nasty to other people. And all of a sudden, I realized I really don't want to get to know her. Well, about 3 or 4 days later, I saw her in the cafeteria. That was the place I'd seen her the first time, was in the cafeteria at school. And the first time I saw her, my thought was, wow, what a beautiful girl. Once I understood her inner beauty or lack thereof, the next time I saw her, she didn't look pretty at all. That's because I knew what she was like on the inside. And you know, that's what Peter's talking about here. Ladies, you need to be beautiful on the inside. That's where it counts. Don't let what you wear, what you put on the outside, the makeup that you have, don't let that define your beauty. Make sure that your beauty is defined by who you are on the inside. Let that be the thing that people see as beautiful. Now, Peter's not saying, ladies, it's not okay to fix yourself up and make yourself look even more beautiful on the outside. He never says that. There are a lot of Pentecostals and holiness in the last 150, 200 years that misinterpreted the scripture and said, oh, that means that women can't fix their hair. They can't do anything special, especially braids. You can't do braids in your hair because the Bible says you can't do braids in your hair. And women can't wear makeup and they can't wear jewelry and all that. It's a sin. And if you wear makeup, you're going to go to hell. I mean, I've heard preachers preach that. That's not what Peter says. Peter goes on to define this inner beauty after his first and primary quality, of course, is being submissive to your husband. But then he goes on to define the inner beauty as being a gentle and quiet spirit. Gentle here means meek. It means humble. Even though you know that you're smarter than your husband is, you're still humble. And quiet means peaceable. Peaceable means promoting peace, helping bring peace. And maybe your husband's an unbeliever. Maybe he's a Christian acting like a jerk. I know that that's possible because I did that for a few years. And so the question is, ladies, can you be what's right? Can you be a godly woman who shows respect to your husband anyhow? Can you be what's right and be gentle and meek and humble and a promoter of peace regardless of how he acts? That's really the question that Peter poses here. And then he says, if you can, it'll work wonders for your marriage. Matter of fact, it can even convert a husband. It'll change your husband if you can do that. But don't expect results in a day or a week or a month. I can tell you from experience that it may take a while. It certainly took a while with Debbie and me. Now, look at verses 5 and 6. These are verses that are really pretty difficult to reconcile with our current age. Because he says, in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God, notice that hoped in God, we're going to come back to it, they used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. Thus Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Woo. So what do you think, ladies? Ready to start calling your husbands Lord?
Oh,
or
God.
Master? Buona, buona, yes. Huh? Well, I'm not sure we have to go quite that far, but Peter admires Sarah for calling Abraham Lord or Master. Matter of fact, Peter calls her holy. She's a holy woman. Ladies, can you overcome your fear and see your husband as the Lord of the house? Can you at least see it by faith, if not by fact? Remember what Abraham did to his wife? It's in Genesis 20, where Abraham meets up with King Abimelech, and the king notices that Sarah is really beautiful. And so what does Abraham do? The king says, I would like to have her as my wife. And Abraham goes, okay, well, she's my sister, so you can have her. Ha! Shame on you, Abraham. That's your wife, boy. Coward. What is he thinking of? And so Abimelech takes Sarah and starts preparing her to make her one of his wives. Now, if Sarah was living today, what would she have done? Hey, King, this creep over here, he's my husband. I hate to admit it, but I ain't going with you. He's my husband. Don't you listen to him. I mean, you know, she'd have stood up and started saying what her rights were, right? She didn't do that. Man, she submitted to what Abraham said. But guess what? God took care of her. She couldn't trust her stupid jerk husband, coward, to take care of her, so she has to trust in God. But guess what? God sends Abimelech a dream, and it scares the pants off the boy. I mean, he gets up right away and goes to Abraham. What are you doing? This is your wife. You almost caused me to sin. See, this is where Peter says here about women who put their hope in God because they couldn't put it in their husbands because they couldn't rely on their husbands, right? Peter is admiring Sarah for being able to be submissive to her husband, call him Lord, even when he wasn't worth it by any stretch of the imagination. But the point here is, this is where he says, thus Sarah called Abraham Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right. In other words, if you be submissive, be gentle, be peaceable, without being frightened by any fear. Now you see what I'm talking about? About ladies, don't be afraid to be submissive to your husband. He's making the point here. Sarah had to hope in God, but she still did what was right. Peter promises us here, if you'll do this, ladies, if you'll abandon your husband to God without fear, God will make sure that you will be protected. Well, we finally get to verse 7, and finally, Peter gets to the man's part of the relationship, and it's only one verse long. You husbands, likewise, live with your wives in an understanding way as with a weaker vessel, since she's a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. It's only one verse, but it's pretty powerful. He starts off, men, be understanding of your wife. Now, let me give you the most extreme version of how to be understanding with your wife, men, okay? When she is PMSing, that is not the time to make major family decisions. It's not the time to have major discussions about a consensus. It's not the time for criticism, no matter how constructive or no matter how light. It's not the time to tell her that she's PMS. Whatever you do, don't tell her, oh, you're PMSing. Just understand, okay? Leave it alone. Say yes to whatever she says and bite your tongue and go on. It only lasts a few days. That's what he's talking about when he says, husbands, understand your wives. Well, I mean, guys say, well, how long am I going to have to put up with this and bite my tongue? Well, as long as she's fertile, you know, which for most women is only about 30 or 40 years. So once a month for 30 or 40 years, this is what you're going to have to do, guys. Just get used to the idea. I fought it for 15 years. You know, I was going to fix her. You can't fix her, guys. It won't happen, okay? Stand back, guys. Understand your wife. That's what he means when he says understand your wife. He gives you some other suggestions about how to do this. Men, talk to your wives. Don't talk down to them. Don't talk at them. Don't say, okay, I'm giving you 15 minutes here. Now, what do you want to talk about? I mean, you know, have a conversation with her. Listen to her and what she has to say. Take the time. Set the time aside to make sure that you can talk and actively listen. You know, participate in the conversation. Find ways to spend some cuddle time with your wife. And I'm not talking about as a prelude to sex or to get something, but just be warm to her. Show her some human warmth. I don't care if it's like snuggling up to an iceberg, and if you're in phase two of your marriage, it may be like snuggling up to an iceberg. It's not whether or not she's doing right. It's not about whether or not she's going to do the right thing. It's about whether or not you're going to be a man and do what's right in your relationship. And you keep showering her with real love and with real warmth and with genuine care, and I promise you she'll eventually melt. Also, when Peter says treat your wife as a weaker vessel, he doesn't say treat her as a weaker vessel because she's weaker. He says treat her like as if she were a weaker vessel. Listen, women are 10 times stronger than us guys in lots of ways, okay? It's not like women are weak. He's just saying give her the deference and give her the respect. You know, open the door for her. Carry heavy things for her. Even after you've been married, even when you're not getting along, guys, make it a point just you're going to do that. That's how you're going to act. And make sure, especially because we really are stronger than the women are, be gentle with them, okay? We can hurt our women. We got to be careful about that. Treat her with special honor. Honor her as a fellow heir of the kingdom of God. See, this is where Peter is talking about the husband and the wife are equal. Now, they're in a relationship where the man is supposed to be the head of the house, but they're completely equal in God's eyes. Now, this is what I find kind of interesting here. Look at the last of verse 7. Peter saying, guys, you need to act right towards your women, and if you don't, your prayers are going to be hindered. So you're not going to understand your wife. You're not going to treat her as a weaker vessel. You're not going to honor her as your equal. Well, guess what? Don't come asking me why your prayers aren't getting answered. That's the reason. Prayers not being answered the way you think they ought to be, take inventory. Maybe you're not treating your wife the way you ought to. You're the head of the house. Act like it. It's your responsibility. Act like a man and be big enough to do whatever your family needs. If you need to take some time and to talk and be sweet to your wife, whether she likes it or not, do it. If you need to bring her some flowers and you need to give the kids baths, whether she appreciates it or not, do it anyway. Be a man. If you need to forgive her, even when you know she's dead wrong, in order to kickstart the relationship back up, then do that. Be a man. If you need to turn off the computer games, turn off the internet, turn off a sports game, even those things, men, you may have to do that in order to give your wife some much-needed attention. Be a man. Do it. If all you can think about is all the wrong things that she's been doing lately, I got a challenge for you. Find three things that you like about your wife and tell her those things to her face, out loud, like a man. Try it. You'll be surprised what happens. Guys, if you have to wait until your wife tells you what you're supposed to tell her, then you probably missed. Well, sometimes in phase two, that's what we have to do. You got to do it on purpose. I mean, you don't feel like hugging her or talking to her or being sweet to her or kissing her, and she doesn't feel like doing any of those things to you, but you're going to have to, on purpose, do it anyway and get over that. That's the only way you're going to get over it. Okay, now let's finish up real quick in 1 Peter 3, verse 8. To sum up, Peter says, let all be, and now here he's talking about, this is where you want to get to, phase three of the marriage. That's where everything is harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving blessing instead. You know, by Peter telling us this, you know what it tells me about Peter? It says, Peter was married. Peter had been through phase two in a marriage. He knew what it was about, trading insult for insult. He knew what it was like to be in a marriage where you weren't sympathetic or brotherly or kind-hearted and returning evil for evil. I mean, he's been here, folks. This is why he's writing this, to help folks get through this part of the marriage. He knew how resentments could build up and how, you know, you could have a contest to see who can hurt each other more and faster, and you can feel like you got to stand up for your own rights or you're going to be trampled on. I mean, he knew what it was like for the light of first love to begin to fade, and you're not sure if it's ever going to come back or not.